Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, a very warm welcome to this month's Lords Podcast. Joining me today, we have former England fast bowler Alex Tudor and cricket writer Andrew Miller. Welcome both.
Morning.
Morning, morning.
Keeping well?
Bloody marvellous. Beautiful day.
Yeah. You can always tell cricket season started, can't you?
When it's raining outside. Lovely. Now, as ever, there's plenty to discuss as we're just a few days away from the opening test of the summer between England and New Zealand here at Lords. We'll preview that match, mull over the latest Kevin Peterson fallout, discuss who may be the new England coach following Peter Moores' sacking, and I'll put my co-host to the test with the podcast quiz. But first, I'd like to take some questions that we've received on Twitter for Alex under the hashtag AskTudes. Alex, first one comes from Narayan Shastri. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah.
Looking back at your 99 not out test score, what do you feel about it 16 years down the line? And just to add to that, Neil Matthews has said, have you forgiven Graham Thorpe yet?
Oh, jeez. Right, okay, it's a question I get asked a lot. Let me just sort of take people back. I was very fresh-faced, 21-year-old. I'd gone to the Ashes, come back. We had a minging World Cup. We didn't even get to the qualifying stages yet again. And obviously, David Lloyd was coach, got sacked. Alex Stewart was captain, got sacked. So it was Nasser Hussain's first game as captain. Graham Gooch sort of stepped in and doing Britpop path. Paul Farbrace will be doing on Thursday here at Lords. And it was, you know, Edgbaston back in the day, it was always very eventful. Wicket went a bit up and down. And it was, yeah, just go out there, enjoy myself on a Saturday afternoon. And everything went my way. Thorpey strolled out when I was about 80. And he said, look, Tudes, this is what it's about. Crowd shouting my name. It was brilliant. And I said, look, Thorpey, don't mess around. The wicket's doing all sorts. We've got a debutant in Aftab Habib. Ramps didn't get none in first innings. Then you're going into Chris Reid, who was also on debut. We don't want to be in a stage when we've got to chase 30 and, you know, and all hell breaks loose. I thought, look, just if it's there to hit, hit it. And he did. And he did. But what people got to realise is that Stephen Fenwick, the captain, did not want me to get 100. So he started putting people behind square. So there was no in front of square when Thorpe was batting. So punches for one or two ended up going for three. And we ran three. And at the end, I needed to try and hit a six to get to 100. Didn't happen. But 99 not out. Have absolutely no regrets. 16 years down the line, or you know, a few years on, it's very frustrating that I wasn't able to register a Test 100 for your country, which not a lot of people have done. It would have been nice to do it. I know Thorpe also, he's written his book that, you know, it's one of his regrets that he wasn't able to get it. My dad and his West Indian mates think there's a conspiracy theory and all sorts of stuff, why it didn't happen. I remember getting stopped in just by Batsy Dog's home by a big Ruster man. He came, pulled up beside me. He's like, wind on your car, wind on your car. I was like, oh God, okay, it's all going to kick off. I said, mate, what's up? Man, that Thorpe! He was upset. It was like 10 years. I said, mate, let it go. You know what I mean? Just let it go. But there is still ill feeling. People get upset about it. And I'm like, look, you know, we won the game. I suppose I was better known for it, you know, 99 not out, and you move on. But I remember going back to Derby on the Sunday. We had a Sunday league game. A few of the other lads didn't feel like to play. Alex Stewart, Mark Butcher, and they decided to have the game off. Me being young, loving playing for Surrey, I went back. And first thing Bickers said to me, he goes, yeah, I've got what you got. And I went, what? He goes, yeah, Test 50. And it just brought you back down to earth very quickly. And that's how our change room was back then. It was brilliant, and it was good. I have no regrets. And me and Thorpe have a laugh about it now.
Good stuff. Do you find it odd, maybe as a fast bowler, that you are remembered for an innings?
Yeah, well, a bit like Rance is remembered not for anything of his 25 years of cricket, and everyone remembers him as a dancer. So no one sort of thinks remembers that I used to be able to bowl a little bit. But yeah, everyone sort of harps on about 99, and I just keep reminding them I was 100 odd not out in the Test match, but I got 32 not out in the first innings. Hence why Nasser threw me in there as night watchman, because no one had got none in first innings. He looked around, changed room, and went, "Chude, you got some, right, you're in." And that was it. And it was like, okay, I'll do it. And that's how he went down.
Lovely, great answer. The next question comes in from Annie. She says, how long before a Steve Davis recall by England? He's been super, batting without fear.
Yeah, you know, I think, what was it? I think he made a decision early last year that he wanted to pack in the belt, the keeping. He just wanted to concentrate on his batting. I mean, he's a very elegant player, and left-handers, for some reason, just tend to be more elegant than the right-handers. And he was always a fine player, very destructive, especially in the one-day format, but he's taken his one-day form into the four-day form. And you will have to look. Definitely, he's up there in leading run scorers. I think him being around, obviously, when Kevin played, and obviously with Kumar Sangakkara, he's an absolute legend and a top bloke. He's only going to get better. So, yes, the England selectors will definitely have to look at him, and it's definitely an option, especially in our one-day game, because we're looking for that sort of expansive player. He is definitely one that could be thrown in there.
I think it's such an important thing as well. There are so many players now sort of starting to take that 2020 one-day form into four-day cricket, which I think is the way that Test cricket's going. I mean, look at David Warner and co. Yeah. Look at Virendra Sehwag. Years ago, he was showing this is the way forward for, you know, it's been 10 years. I think England have got to pick up on, you know, the Alex Haleses of this world and Steve Davis. It's the way the game's headed.
Yeah, definitely.
Certainly, we'll come on to England very shortly. Next question on hashtag AskTudes from Daniel Alexander. Which Sri Lankan test players would you have in your all-time test 11?
Oh, geez. Well, I suppose when I first started, Aravinda, for me, was an absolute class player. Not that I played against him, I saw 12th man and he got some runs down against us down at Canterbury. It was just elegant. I remember he got that 100 here against Lancashire, which was breathtaking. So he would be there, but I suppose Kumar, just for what he's done, he's just come in and he's, you know, with the weighted pressure him and Mahela have been under to score the bulk of the runs, and they do it, you know, not just in their country, because normally with the subcontinent they're like, well, they struggle in England, they struggle in Australia, well, these two don't, and they score very heavily. Their record will tell you so. And also, you can throw him in there with keeping. But I know, obviously, you know, everyone, if you talk about a World 11, you would have to throw Gilchrist in there as well. But for me, Kumar, because he'll bat higher. And you most probably, I suppose, with any of those two, you'll be able to get in an extra bowler.
Next question from Spencer Women's Cricket Club. If you could have played with one player, past or present, who would it be?
Growing up in a West Indian home, and watching the greats in the late, well, not so much of the 70s, I was born in 77, but in early 80s, Malcolm Marshall was my hero, and I was able to meet him, talk to him and stuff like that, so that was an honour. Michael Holding, people like that. So I suppose Malcolm Marshall, just to see him just operate and see how he goes about it. He's a little bit, I call Jimmy Anderson the sort of English version of Malcolm Marshall, just because what he's able to do with the ball and just how he works out batsmen and stuff like that is, it's not just fast bowling, running in and bowling around the neck. It's, you know, assessing the batsman, what's his weakness, and then those type of bowlers making the most of it. So for me, Malcolm Marshall.
If you don't mind me asking, what did you and what did he talk about when you met him? Was it cricket or?
Oh yeah, yeah, he was a cricket badger. Absolutely, I remember it was myself and Chris Lewis. We was on the balcony at Guildford. And he just spoke about cricket. And I don't know how many of the young guys do that now, but whenever I was in the presence of an ex-player or someone who's played a game at highest level and done well, I always wanted to pick their brain. And I don't know if the young guys in this modern era do that. I don't know if they do sit down if they're playing against them, maybe a Kumar now. Do the opposition players sort of at the end of the game sort of go in there and pick his brain? How does he go about it, you know? I'm sure, you know, the normal adage of hard work and stuff like that will come into it. But I do like being around. That's why I sort of, I'm fortunate now with the PCA Masters and with Lashings that I get to sort of be in the same room with these guys and I just sit down and listen to things in the past and stuff like that. I absolutely love it.
And you're coaching now, aren't you? That's your...
Yeah, enjoy coaching and all what I've learned with the great players that I've played with and against. I just try and pass that knowledge on to the young kids now and, yeah, seem to have a good rapport with them and stuff. I don't know if 6'5" helps, but I don't seem to get any problems. But no, it's brilliant and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, next question is about coaching. It's from Lennox Blythe Watley. My 10-year-old son is a budding fast bowler. What advice would you give him to improve his speed?
An old coach of mine. The thing with bowling, I find with coaching bowling, it's sometimes you either have or you haven't, and it's just so unnatural. And sometimes you can see someone and they just get it and they just have it. But generally, it's you just got to want it. I remember my dad always saying to me, you know, you've got to imagine you're going to explode a ball on the length. You just want to bowl it hard as fast as you can. You just got to bowl it as fast as you can. Don't really worry about where it's going at that age, because that you can work with later. It's the pace that you can't teach. And it's just doing the things that I suppose is not easy, but just do a lot of maybe resistant band work. Not about, obviously he's very young, so I would never encourage people going to the gym or anything like that, but just keep doing your sit-ups and stuff like that. If I was to sort of go back, I'd have worked. I remember meeting Dennis Lilly, and he was just saying, you know, 15, 20 minutes a day, just crunch them out, just do sit-ups and push-ups, because your torso, your lower half is what takes all the hard work, so you're going to have to put it in. So I would always say to young kids now, make sure you do your sit-ups, your push-ups, band resistance work, and just get that ball down there as quick as you can.
Well, hopefully maybe Lennox's son will do that when he's a little bit older. Maybe too young to start crunching out the sit-ups at 10.
No. I'll tell you, with the kids now, that's what I do. You know, if they do it, we have this sort of like a forfeit.
Yeah.
And either I do them,
all right,
or they do them. And, you know, because of the modern age now, everything's computer, and, you know, the guys are very good at computers, and people talk about obesity and that now. So it's, you know, a 10-year-old should be able to do push-ups and sit-ups.
Sounds like my sadistic PE teacher.
I'm not evil, people, trust me. I told you I'm old school.
And final question under hashtag AskTudes. It comes from Govinda Singh. Your favourite moment in cricket? That was a big question there.
I've been fortunate. I would say as a young lad, you watch the TV, you see all the greats playing, and you one day want to be a part of that. And so I say making my debut in Perth, because it happened a lot sooner than I thought it was going to. And just playing with people that I watched on the TV. Don't want to make Stewie and that sound old, but he is. And playing with guys that I grew up watching when I was at school, and then being in the same side as them was a pinch yourself moment. And playing against that Aussie side was phenomenal, with the War Brothers and Ponting and Mark Taylor and stuff like that. It was something that you dream about, but I had done it, so I'll say that moment.
Great stuff. Andrew, I'll ask the same question to you, actually. What's your favourite moment in cricket?
Gosh, I don't have many to fall back on.
Well, maybe as a viewer as well, as a journalist watching, what moments?
Well, the first moment that really stood out for me was right here in 1990, Gooch's 333. That was kind of the first time I really sort of clocked in to think, wow, this is a pretty awesome sport. I mean, it wasn't just that innings, it was that match. That whole match was just incredible. Mm. You know, the reply, the four sixes to save the follow-on. Gooch and himself getting three wickets in the second innings. He never bloody got any wickets in his life, and suddenly he's getting wickets and running people out to win the game. It just, yeah, everything just fell into place in terms of a spectacle for that match. So that's probably the one that really stands out for me.
Mm. Lovely. In just a moment's time, we're going to talk about Kevin Peterson. But whilst you're mentioning the Ashes there, Alex, I'd like to talk about your Ashes memories.
Yep.
You were part of the 2001 side, which unfortunately lost to Australia, but it was quite a tough Australian side to play, one of the greatest cricket sides ever. What are your memories from that series?
I remember getting the call up and then played at it was Trent Bridge, and Nasser had done his hand yet again. So Mike Atherton stepped in as captain. I had a slight little niggle before the game. I had to go and see the physio and stuff like that. And Mike just sort of, in the middle, we had a little chat, and he just said, look, dude, you know your body now. Will you be able to get through 5 days? And I said, yes. And he went, that's good enough for me. Then played. And then, as I said, you know, oh, good first innings. Got five wickets. Got a couple, I think, in the second. But we ended up losing. You know, Gillespie, I think he got five for as well. Bowled well. Very good bowler. Shane Warne, yet again. and then they knocked off chasing 130 odd, I think it was, in the second innings. But and then we went up to Headingley, where Mark Butcher obviously got that 170 odd, where Gilchrist was captain, and you know, he gave us that declaration. And yeah, it was just one of those days. Butch, everything he hit went to the boundary. Nasser batted very well with him, and yeah, the scenes were absolutely phenomenal, but we just couldn't get over it. And then I think Steve Waugh got 100 at the Oval on one leg. I remember him having a little pop about Thorpe, I think Thorpe had been injured or something, and he was like, it takes more than that, you know, for me to not play a test match and all this. And he did it on one leg, and it was sort of touch and go whether he was going to play or not. And Steve Waugh being Steve Waugh, you know, went out there and got 100, which was phenomenal. So yeah, you know, we've had some ups and downs when I played. I mean, on my first tour, where it was 2-1 after we came back at Melbourne, got to Sydney, the run out fiasco, where we had Slater out, he was out, he's basically walking halfway back to the pavilion. I think Daryl Harper was on the video as a third umpire. But I think either Peter Such was obscuring the sort of the line, the crease line, and he couldn't give it out. Went to the batsman. He ended up smashing 100 out of only 200 odd. So he made the difference. And then obviously we got McGild in the second innings. So I don't think it made a difference, to be fair. He got 16, I think, in the game. But yeah, just that moment. And it could have been 2-2. And against a very, very good Australian team. You know, I think the confidence we'd have got from that moving forward would have been absolutely phenomenal. But it wasn't to be. We ended up losing 3-1. But I think we could have held our head high after that series.
That was one of the greatest travesties I've ever witnessed. I'm fairly sure it was Simon Torfel. I've never forgiven him.
Simon Torfel.
never forgiven him for it.
Yeah, he was very fresh-faced back then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was only about 30. He was a real whippersnapper. And, I don't know.
Alec was not happy. It was at one stage, I think he was going to threaten to bring us off. It was that bad. Yeah, it was just that. Sometimes in sport, you have those moments where you think, this can be it, we're into them. You know, Dino was bowling very well. Goffey was doing what he normally does and just steaming in for us. And it just made a massive difference. And obviously with that lifeline, the way Slater plays, it just gave him a whole new thing. Oh, well, it's got to be with me today. And he just teed off as he did. And he got 100 very quickly. We did rattle him out because obviously Goffey came and got that hat-trick, which was phenomenal. And then, as I said, you know, we made a bit with a pig's ear of it in the second dig, but McGill was absolutely brilliant and bowled us down. But those little 1%ers make a huge difference. And if we'd have got it, as I said, you know, we bring it back to 2-2, we come back something like little, not like heroes, but it would have been a massive uplift. Because as you said, we hadn't done that for a very long time.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, Australian captain Michael Clarke has waded into the Kevin Peterson saga over the weekend by declaring that England will be weaker without him. Clark stated that Peterson's in the form of his career after the Surrey batsman scored 355 not out against Leicestershire. However, it was not enough for the ECB to change their stance on Peterson, with new director of cricket, Andrew Strauss, stating that Peterson will not be involved with England this summer due to trust issues, seemingly ending his England career. Clark's comments aren't that surprising, considering he is the captain of the opposition in an Ashes summer. But this is the latest in the ongoing Kevin Peterson saga, story, whatever you want to call it. Andrew, so where do you stand on it overall?
Well, in this saga, you are either with him or against him. There's no option. You can't be on the fence in this saga, and therefore I'm with KP. You have to pick your side, and I'm with KP. But I'm with KP not because I particularly think that he should be back in the team. I think he should have a right to be in the frame. But whether he has a right to walk straight back in the team, I'm not so sure. Because to be fair, that middle order is quite strong, quite settled, and looking to the future. So, they have all the rights to protect their positions and have first dibs this summer. I've got no problem with that. Yeah. But what I do have a problem with is the notion that you can say to a guy who has scored 355 not out, we aren't even going to think about you. Yeah. That is just wrong to me. It's wrong for so many reasons. Largely because it's an insult to the fans, and that's the biggest concern for me. It's not about KP. KP has been there, done that. He'll be annoyed for the rest of his career. Who really cares about KP in an individual sense? What does matter, though, is the fans. If the fans don't believe that England are picking the best players available, they lose faith in the format. And if they lose faith in Test cricket as the pinnacle of sport, pinnacle of cricket, what's the point of watching it? That's my concern. I think England have really got to think carefully about their PR battle, because they've been beaten every step of the way in this one.
Yeah, I back Andrew up there, everything he said. We have to sort of get past the Kevin Peterson sort of as an individual, and just, as we said, it's the public. For me, it's the public that are missing out. As you say, it's been a schmozzle World Cup. We were supposed to go to the West Indies and dominate them. That didn't happen. So all of a sudden, they want to have the best 11 out there. By all accounts, Kevin was told, no reassurances, but he was told, look, come back, give up your IPL contract, come back, find a county, score runs. He's done all that above, he's done all that. To shut the door, just plainly before it's even started, just say, look, we're just not even thinking about you, I think is a massive mistake. As Andrew says, it wasn't a case of, right, 3-5-5, he plays the first game here. That was never going to happen. But I think if you say, well, it's going to be a very hard summer. There's some very fast bowlers bowling. Someone can get a broken hand. Someone could get injured. If you carry on getting runs, then you're going to be in a shake-up. Because as you say, 3-4-5 is gone. You've got balance, you've got Bell, you've got Root. I mean, they deserve to play. That's not going to go. Kevin's not going to be a test opener. So that's not even an argument. But to shut the door so quickly, I think, is a massive mistake. And my worry is that now for these young batsmen is, every time they get a low score, it's going to be a media circus. It's going to be everyone. And if Kevin's away in the CPL or wherever, and he's scoring runs, everyone's going to say, well, this is a joke. What's he doing in West Indies? He should be wherever the game's going on at the time. And it just heaps on massive pressure. And it just didn't need to be that way. My whole thing with the trust issue is, okay, that's fine. But can we know, as a public, who is it that doesn't trust him? Because a lot of the personnel has now changed. The coach has changed. The individual players that he had a problem with have changed. The only three that I see that are in there is obviously the captain, Cook, Broad and Anderson. They're the only ones that have played with him. All the rest are fresh, haven't played with KP. And I'm sure a lot of them would love him in the side or around the side. So is it a personal thing between, Strauss and KP? By all accounts, the media have been coming out and saying, an ultimatum by Alistair Cook sort of said, well, if it's him, I'm gone. And you get into that stage, it's just getting beyond the joke now. And as I said, it's the public, the paying public, and as we know, the tickets are not cheap, that are missing out. So I just hope, starting on Thursday, that the guys can just get together and galvanise the summer, because it can go pear-shaped very, very quickly. And then the worry is, will people start to stay away from the game, which is my biggest worry.
It does seem, though, now with Strauss's comments that Kevin Peterson will not play this summer, and then after that, does the Kevin Peterson story sort of start to end? Because then he's 35, 36. Do you know what I mean?
There's Kevin Peterson's story will never end.
Will it? No. Yeah.
that's even
when he's 50 or 60,
Peterson story will never end because Kevin Peterson has absolutely bossed the story. That's the trouble. He is the story. He knows he's the story, and it's the root of why he's a story is why the England team object to it so much, because it's not about the individual, it should be about the team. We all accept the principle that they're trying to put forward. The trouble is, it's been drowned out by the nonsense that goes in protecting that principle. You cannot single out an individual and say that no individual is greater than the game, and then say that, well, actually, everything that's wrong with the game is an individual. Mm. I mean, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So you've got to just be consistent in your messages. If you don't want KP to be treated differently, don't treat him differently. And until England accept that, you know, he's significantly big cheese, a bigger cheese, unfortunately,
yeah,
because of the profile he's been able to get from the history he's created. Until they accept that he's such a big cheese, they can't move on.
Yeah, my whole thing was with it is, once the massive individuals that were able to keep him in check left the side, so you're talking about your Flintoff, your Harmison, your Hoggard, Giles, Jones, those type of characters are able to pull him in. Once they went, KP became the biggest cheese in the changing room, and a lot of them weren't able to keep him in check. And for me, that's when the management have to step in. And I think obviously during that time we became number one, the team were doing very well, so everyone lets things slide.
Yeah,
it's when we got that mauling in Australia that obviously the wheels come off, and when you have a maverick, everyone looks at Maverick, well, he's the problem, let's get rid of him. And I think that was unfair. For me, that's where management skills come in, and if you see that someone's sort of getting out of line, you pull them all in. They're all grown men, just crack their heads together and say, look, sort it out. Look, you don't have to be best friends, you don't have to go out for food, you don't have to go to cinema, but once we cross that white line, we're fighting the same cause, we want to win, want to, you know, make the public proud, make you proud, you know, yourself proud and your parents proud, and you go out there and do the job. And I just don't, you know, Kevin's matured now. Like, everyone's made mistakes. A lot of the stuff that he did was earlier on. He's now got a child and all that type of thing. He wouldn't want to see his son see the bad press going to go when he goes to school. He wouldn't want that. So he's matured a lot. And as I said, who has the problem now with KP, within the ECB? We don't know. It's just thrown out there. And, you know, when the interviews were given us, you know, when he was, you know, when Andrew was speaking with Jonathan Agnew and all of that, he's like, you know, when Jonathan asked him the question, never really answered, he says, well, you've been around, you know about it. But as someone who's listening is like, well, tell us who it is, or what it is. We don't know. I think if everyone knew everything and all the cards were put out there, then maybe the public might be a little bit more receptive. But as we don't get any information, it's they're not happy.
Have you, because Peterson's at your old county, Surrey, at the moment.
Yes.
Have you spoken with anyone
yes.
at Surrey?
I'm very good friend. Obviously, Alec is a legend, and I'm lucky enough to call him a very close friend. And I speak to Surrey a lot. And I even last year when KP was there, the guy speak nothing but high praise of him. He's not a problem. He's gone in there. He's done masterclass with the boys, how to play spin and all this type of thing. He's been very good and never been late, turned up on time, no problems whatsoever. And as I said, he's moved on. KP's a more mature guy. As I said, when he was young and brash, he came to the side, he had the hair, he had all the deals and everything like that. Yes, sometimes that can go to your head. When you get older and things have happened and everyone done the book and everyone complains about the book, oh, he's not playing because of the book. I said, yeah, but why did the book first come about? Because he got sacked and everything went on to him. So obviously, KP was not going to lie down and not let anything happen. He was going to have his say. And I've not seen any cases or anyone going to court or anything. So a lot of what he put in his book, it must be true. Isn't it? I've not read the book, but you know, you have abstracts from it and stuff, and I haven't seen anyone sue him.
Well, that is the single biggest mistake the ECB made was sticking that culture of silence, slapping a confidentiality agreement across the entire summer last year, when frankly there needed to be a bloodletting after an Ashes that bad.
Yeah.
Something needed to come out. Say what needs to be said in the public. Let the public decide and move on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the public would have moved on if anyone had been open and honest. Instead. Yeah, we weren't allowed to talk about any of the stuff that had gone on. KP wrote his book because he was, as you say, sacked out of the frame. And then suddenly the door is just held ajar. You can come back if you want.
Yeah.
He stormed through it. I mean, checkmate. you can't blame KP for ambition. That's the one thing he's never lacked.
No.
Well, the other big thing to talk about at the moment is there's now a coaching vacancy at the ECB for the head coach. Peter Moores has been sacked. Andrew Stiles has to select a replacement. The front runners are Jason Gillespie and Justin Langer, according to the media.
Yeah.
Where do you two stand on those characters or those two as coaches? And also, with Stiles saying that Kevin Peters is not in the side and giving Cook the backing as captain, doesn't that maybe make it slightly tougher for a coach to then come in clean slate?
Absolutely. It's a very dicey situation. I mean, I think Gillespie would be fantastic. I mean, he is he's an absolute legend. I mean, let's face it. Chew to be able to back this up. I've never seen anyone who has a seam position as buzzsaw straight down the pitch. I mean, he knows his stuff. He's an absolute legend who can contribute with mindset, contribute with skills, he contribute with all the things that maybe Peter Moores, when push came to shove, couldn't really give to the team in that same sort of I've been there, done that way. So he would be a brilliant man to have on board. He speaks well, he's passionate, he's clearly done a great job at Yorkshire. Ticks every box except for two. One, the England team spend 300 days a year on the road, and he's got four kids, I think, and he really doesn't want to be away from home, so that's a big deal. And two, if England are telling him, look, you've got all these skills that we want to have, but you know you can't have the most skilled batsman in the country, and your hands are tied because the captain is protected, and essentially it's going to be the director of cricket who makes the big calls, why would he take it? I mean, I wouldn't want to take a job that constrained if I had all the credentials to do it in my own way. And you know, he's already come out saying a little bit of I'm not so sure anymore. Yeah. It's I think again they've made a straitjacket for themselves.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. I mean, didn't we have this problem last time when candidates went out and a lot of them were saying, well, I would want KP in the side, and they were told, well, no, and they went, well, because at the end of the day, it's if they do well, then obviously they have longevity. If they don't do well, they get sacked. And no coach goes into a job wanting to get sacked. So he wants the best side that he can pick from to go out there and perform. So it, you know, it looks good on him. So the same problem with Andrew is saying is, you know, if the likes of Justin Langer, which, you know, he has five kids and, you know, they're young, and is he going to leave all because by all accounts, he's sort of ready-made to take over, and Darren Lehman, who they say may do maybe 18 more months, and then he'll step straight in. So will he? And he's a passionate Australian, goes to bed in his baggy green. Is he going to want to coach an England side to try and think the bit? I personally don't think so. And Jason Gillespie, as you said, his hands are tied. If he takes a job, you can't pick your best batsman. So that's going to be the problem. And then you talk about the England candidates. Well, you know, you've got Mike Newell, then you're going to have the same problem that Peter Moores had, never played at the highest level. Mike Robinson down at Sussex has got a very good reputation, has done very well. But will he want to leave? Because obviously, you know, you go into the hotbed of, when you go as captain, as coach, everyone wants to know your business and everything like that. And does he want that? He seems quite a nice, chilled man and quite happy with what he's doing down at Sussex with a very good side and what he does with the ECB. So how many other candidates are there? Yeah. You know, and then the person who comes in, is he going to be a puppet? Is he going to be a yes man? Because, as you say, he wants to take the job because, let's not get it wrong, it's very rewarding. And he just wants to do it. And, you know, you've got Andrew Shaw saying, right, you can't pick KP. Alistair Cook is boss. You know, so I don't know who else there is apart from those two.
Could Paul Farbrace maybe continue as coach if he does well?
Well, yes, but then you're going to have the same problem where there are people, unfortunately, that say if you haven't played at the highest level, then I don't agree with those because of, you don't have to play at the highest level too. But unfortunately, I think in modern, sometimes in football and within cricket, it's like when you go through the door, as Andrew says, if Jason Gillespie go through the door, straight away the guys think, geez, well, legend. He's played at high level, 200 odd test wickets, how many other one day wickets? We're going to hear what he says. He's speaking from experience.
A cricket thing, though? Because you mentioned football then, but if you look at football managers, most of the best football managers didn't actually play at the highest level.
Correct.
They played it to a decent level. So like Sir Alex Ferguson, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Mourinho never played.
Yeah, Wenger. Yeah, I mean, but they have built that reputation sort of going through the countries where they've played and stuff like that. So people think, oh, okay, they know their stuff. And Wenger totally changed the way we as a nation think about, you know, your diet and all that. He brought all that in and stuff like that. So he's
trying to... And another thing, I think a crucial difference is the... Because it's a squad mentality in football, it's more about man management in football, in my opinion. You've got to be able to recognise characters that you can mould, you can bring people in, you can sell them off if they don't work, which is what, if Peter Moores was a football manager and said, you know what, I can't work with KP, that's fine, bring in someone you can work with. The trouble is, in England, you don't have that option. You have to work with what you're given.
Yeah.
And if you cannot work with the best players, the question is, why not? It's your problem, not the player's problem.
We've always seemed to struggle, and I know people talk about it, is when we have these individuals that are slightly different, toe the party line, as people call it, brown nosing and all that type of thing. When they are different, you have a maverick. We never tend to deal with them right in this country. I don't know why. That's why I have so much respect for Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, he had the likes of Cantona, and I know Gary Neville tells a story where they had won the league, they went to the... to get this award from the mayor or something, they all wore their tie and blazer. Cantona turns up with ripped jeans and stuff like that. So Neville, being how he is, he's gone up to Fergie and said, "Boss, what's going on?" And he went, "Young man, be quiet. Without him, you wouldn't have won the league. You wouldn't have had your win bonus. So shut him out." And Gary went, "Ah, fair enough, hands up." And it's how you deal with those individuals. I always said this is, you know, with England, you're not so much coaching, because the guys are very good, they've done well, you don't really want to change them too much, you just want them to do what they've done in county cricket. Obviously, they're playing at a high level, but you just want them to go out there and express themselves. So you don't want to coach the talent out of them. It's about man management and dealing with the different individuals and bringing them together, so when they go out there, they're fighting together for the cause of winning and trying to be the best they can. And we just seem to struggle in this country every time we have someone who doesn't really toe the party line.
Well, there are some very talented individuals in that England squad, and we're going to come on to it now, because the first test match of the English summer gets underway at Lord's this week. England face New Zealand in what many are thinking will be a very tight encounter. I caught up with a former German footballer, Dietmar Hamann, who is a big cricket fan, and it's good that we're just talking about football there, so that's made my link really easy. He told me that a Black Caps win would not be an upset.
In South, in Bold, they've got some very good bowlers, and I think the conditions are probably pretty similar to New Zealand here. So I think it'll be a very interesting game. England coming off a disappointing series against the West Indies. So I think it'll be very tight. And, years ago, you probably wouldn't have given the Black Caps a chance coming to England. But I think this will be pretty even. And if England don't play to the best of their ability, I think there's a chance. And I wouldn't even say it's an upset, because I think... And New Zealand showed again in the one-day World Cup in the 50 overs that they have come on. And as I said, with McCullum in his side, anything is possible.
Well, there you go. So how strong is this New Zealand side? Because they were very good in the World Cup,
yes.
But is it going to be as tight as everyone thinks?
No, I think if it was a one-day format, then yes, they would obviously be overall favourites. And I think obviously a few have got carried away with what they've done in the one-day competition. The Red Bull form is slightly different. England in England are a different prospect altogether. So it's not going to be easy. I mean, you know, having to face Broad and Anderson here is not going to be easy for their batters. Obviously, Kane Williamson has a lot of experience over here, being at Yorkshire and stuff like that. He's a very, very good player. Ross Taylor on his day is a world-class batsman and is very dominant. And, you know, McCullum, well, it's... Depends what McCullum comes back from the IPL. He might still have IPL in him, so the crowds could be royally entertained, but he could easily nick off as well. So Guptill is a tall, strong, hard-hitting opening batsman. So they have some very good players. And then you've got Luke Raunke, who comes in a little later. He's a dasher as well. And obviously Bolt and Southie are the key exponents of swinging conditions. You know, Bolt is a very, very talented left-arm seamer who I like a lot, and he's come on leaps and bounds. Southie I liked. You know, he's played a little bit at Essex, and, you know, I'm impressed with him. And they have a few others. You know, I don't know if McCallaghan will be in their test makeup or whatever, but they have some very good bowlers. So it won't be easy. It'll be a great challenge, and we shall see how they get on Thursday.
And for England, Adam Lyth is set to make his test debut. He'll be opening alongside Alistair Cook. Is that the right decision? Have we I'd like to talk about something positive with England. He's played extremely well for Yorkshire last year. He seems to be in the form of his life. So
yeah, I agree. I think it is a good news story. I think it's nice to see a player who has won the championship with Yorkshire, being the leading run scorer, and now getting his rewards playing for England. It's the right way to get your merits. So the only disappointment for me is that he didn't make his debut in the West Indies when he probably should have had his opportunity. I mean, you know, it's all very sad for Jonathan Trott, yes. but, you know, it's proven that his career wasn't going to recover from the Ashes. But, you know, and in one sense, getting closure is probably a good thing for England, but at the expense of giving a debut in circumstances that may be less pressurised than a pretty gaily windy Lords in early season England. It's, you know... The other problem, of course, I mean, you talk about the IPL guys coming across from India and having to adjust at the last minute. Because of England touring the Caribbean and taking Adam Blythe to carry the drinks out there, he's in pretty much the same boat. He's not had the batting over here that he should have done. He should have had three or four innings by now in English conditions to really get used to it. I mean, you know, Kane Williamson, his teammate at Yorkshire, has got pretty much the same boat when it comes to the first day at Lords. So you can't just say it's New Zealand are going to have the problems adjusting. Some of the England batsmen, some of the England bowlers are going to have similar problems.
And another thing with Lyth, this is slightly going a bit off piece, but his test shirt, he's going to wear number 666.
Number of the beast.
And he's he says he's not superstitious, so he's going to take it. So
okay. I've been counting down for this one for about 6 or 7 years. I've been looking forward to this for ages.
Who's going to be the beast?
I think it's the right sort of bloke. Actually, I think.
Well, we know the headline if he gets 100, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
What was your number, Alex?
I was 592. I was just after Ashley Giles. I think he was 591. I was 592.
Would you have taken 666? Because he's been given the option not to take it, but he's decided to take it.
I possibly might not have taken 666. Yes, I may have. Listen.
A lot of cricketers are very superstitious.
Alec was the worst. Like he wouldn't any like 13. He wouldn't even Friday. He wouldn't go out. If his room number added up to 13, he wouldn't have it and stuff like. He was terrible.
Is this Stuart Alex?
This is Alex Stewart, the gaffer. He was ridiculous. Wouldn't step on lines and stuff like that. He is proper superstitious.
Is it the same in the change room? Did he have his spot?
He had his spot and his stuff. As you see Alec now, he's very well presented and it's immaculate. And he always said to me as a young man, he said, look, if you look smart, you've got half a chance. You even look like you should belong. And he was very much, I mean, he went as much as I always had Mick out of him saying, are you even ironing your socks and stuff like that. But he was presented very well, not a crease in his shirt, shoes, everything was just in line. And if you messed it up... Let me tell you, it went a wise idea, which Jason Ratcliffe found out when we won a championship 1 year. Decided to mess with Alex's gear. Bad idea.
although someone tweeted me the other day, the actual number of the beast is 355 not out.
Oh. Very clever. Very, good. Very clever.
Very good.
On that note, we're going to have a little bit of fun now with the Lord's podcast quiz. So just to explain the rules, if you don't know them, you're going up against each other. I'm going to name a cricketer and a non-cricketer, someone from the celebrity world. And all you have to do is tell me who is older and you win the point. You can go for the same person if you want to be tactical. But Alex, as is customary, you go first and Andrew, you go second. So they should be relatively topical. We'll pick the first one up here. So... Who is older, Adam Blythe, who's going to make his England debut here in a few days' time, or Rihanna?
Oh God, Adam Blythe is the same age as Chris Jordan because they went to the same school.
I like how he's thinking.
He's thinking, which is more than most.
I will go live.
I'll have to go Rihanna because just to be different.
Adam Blythe is indeed older.
Very good, very good.
1-0. The next one. Right, Andrew, you go first on this one. Richard Hadley or Samuel L. Jackson?
Right, now Richard Hadlee was 40, I believe, when he played his last test in 1990, so that makes him, God, 65, really? Jesus. So, Samuel L. Jackson, he's getting on, but is he that old? I think Hadley's older.
Do I have to go against, or?
No, you can go.
Agree. Yeah, definitely.
So you both think Richard Hadlee's older? Samuel L. Jackson is older by 3 years.
What?
Samuel L. Jackson is 66.
Wow. By 3 years?
Richard Hadlee is 63.
Oh, fair enough. I screwed up my calculation.
So there, you both draw a blank on that one.
Oh, damn.
Alex, you to go first on this one. Who is older, Kevin Peterson or Spanish World Cup winner Xabi Alonso?
KP Just.
I'll go Alonso.
It is KP Just by a year.
Oh dear.
A 2-0 lead. You can pull this back, Andrew. You've still got two to go. 2-0 to.
Well, I can't lose, thank God.
Who is older? England's 2005 Ashes winning captain Michael Vaughan or comedian Michael McIntyre?
Right. Now then, so he'd have been, he must be 40 something by now, so I presume anyway, God, everyone's getting old. I will say Michael McIntyre.
I'm not sure if Thorny's even 40 yet. I would say, actually, I think Michael McIntyre looks like he's had a bit of a paper round, so I want to say Vaughan.
So you're saying Vaughan?
I'm saying Vaughan's older.
Vaughan's older, and you're saying Michael McIntyre. Michael Vaughan is indeed older.
Oh, I'm on fire!
Denied!
There's a year in it, which means, Alex, you've got a 3-0 lead going into the final one.
I wish that was QPR's James this year.
We'll finish off the final one just for fun. Alex, you to go first on this one. Who is older? Alex Tudor or Benedict Cumberbatch?
Oh, God. Me.
You.
It's Benedict Cumberbatch. He's a year older than
me. He's a year older than me, is he?
There we go.
Old git.
So, well done, Alex. That's a 3-0 victory. Commiserations, Andrew.
I won last time, so... last time.
Well, many thanks for both coming on. Alex, what have you got coming up over the next few weeks?
Yeah, just we got some coaching. I do a bit with Ian Salisbury on a Friday night, turn and bounce. Obviously, I'm the bounce. Just about. So we do it on Friday. I coach at my club, Spencer, on a Wednesday. Club cricket on Saturday. And Sunday, yeah, more coaching. So it's a bit of a busy week. I am still playing. Yeah, I still play. We're 2-2. And we did get relegated, though. So I said this is my final year on a Saturday, just because, you know, I've got 3 kids now. I've got a little boy. And just, I think, time away now is precious. And it's a long day, Saturdays now. So it's something that I think the league need to think about, actually. Is maybe, you know, those all day games are not the one, and I just find that a lot of guys now that have kids are tending not to play, the wives are not happy and stuff, so we need to find a way where we can just, you know, just play the limited overs. You just win or lose and that's it. These all day games and the losing draw, right, I moan about it every Saturday. I do have a rant, it just winds me up. I just don't see the point of them, to be fair.
Yeah, participation, it's the biggest issue for English cricket, all told, whether it's KP attracting people or finding time to play it yourself, it's a big issue for the game to tackle this year.
We'll do that on the next podcast. I feel very sorry for the batsmen in the league that turn up on a Saturday and take guard, and you're standing at the top.
No, trust me, they're all right. Me bowling it is certainly mine now. It's all good. It's club wickets. They're not really hard, so I'm more like the Martin Bicknell of the league. I just sort of bowl it line and length, and that's it. And then we have young Tarraway at the other end. But it's good. I still enjoy it. You know, we've got some good youngsters. And one thing with my club is that we try to bring through our colts. So I think on Saturday we had 6 that had come through the ranks. So I enjoy that, because obviously other leagues and other clubs do tend to, you know, I can't say buy-in because they're not really meant to be doing it, but you know, they get players from all over the place, and we try to use our very good youth system, which we have, to bring through our kids.
Great stuff. And Andrew, what have you got coming up in the next week or so? You're here for the test match?
I'm here for the test match, which means I'll be missing the league game for the Camel and the North East London League on Saturday, which is a shame. But I'll be back for the next one. We haven't won a game yet this season. We'll keep plugging away on dirty turf wickets on Hackney Marshes.
Wickets, yes.
Well, many thanks for both coming in. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yes, it's been great. Thanks for having
me. Absolutely.
Great stuff. Well, many thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's @HomeOfCricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.